there shall be signs in the sun, and in the moon, and in the stars, and upon the earth distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear, and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. One man, one microphone, one mission, one message. True News, the only newscast reporting the countdown to the second coming of Jesus Christ. And now for the most powerful hour on radio, here is End Time Newsman, Rick Wiles.
This is True News, 1 hour of uncensored news, views, and commentary. Welcome to the program. I'm Rick Wiles. Retired NORAD Commander General Jim Cash will join me in 15 minutes to discuss what appears to be a systematic plan to dramatically weaken America's national security. Erath County, Texas, law enforcement officials are still sorting through the facts of a bizarre double murder at the Rough Creek Lodge west of Glen Rose, Texas. Retired Navy SEAL Chris Kyle, considered the U.S. military's most lethal sniper alive today, and a close friend, Chad Littlefield, were shot at close range multiple times at a shooting range at the lodge on Sunday. There were no witnesses to the murder of the famous Navy SEAL sniper and his friend. Sheriff Tommy Bryant said the suspect, Eddie Ray Routh, was arrested later Sunday evening. Neighbors watched as armed police officers surrounded the suspect's home in Lancaster, Texas. Nearby neighbors said police officers did not fire any shots at the alleged gunman as he fled his home. Routh was later stopped by a stripe of spikes and was arrested at approximately 9 p.m. He was held Sunday night in the Erath County Jail in Stephenville, Texas, on two counts of capital murder and a $3 million bond. The official story so far is that Eddie Routh was suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder following his 2007 tour of duty in Iraq as a U.S. Marine, and that his mother asked the famous Navy SEAL to help her son. Kyle did not know the alleged shooter before meeting on the shooting range with him. Kyle was the author of the best-selling book American Sniper. He is believed to have killed between 150 and 250 Islamic jihadists in Iraq, including one shot over a mile away. The three men reportedly entered the Rough Creek Lodge at 3:15 p.m. Sunday. The bodies of the two men were discovered by a hunting guide at 5 p.m. After shooting the SEAL sniper and his friend, Routh reportedly drove to his sister's home and confessed to her what he did to the two men. Police surrounded his home in Lancaster at 8 p.m., but he jumped in a truck and drove away without any of the armed police officers attempting to stop him. Texas Highway Patrolmen later captured him after disabling the truck tires with spikes on I-35 East. Erath County Sheriff Tommy Bryant said deputies retrieved a semi-automatic handgun from Ralph's home that may be the murder weapon. Law enforcement officials said there is no motive for the double killing and that there were no signs of struggle at the scene. Police also said it appears that both Kyle and Littlefield were practicing when they were shot to death. Routh was tasered and restrained to a chair in his cell Sunday night after becoming combative with Sheriff Department deputies. He is confined alone in an isolated cell. Chris Kyle was not only America's best military sniper, he was also a vocal opponent of Barack Obama's gun control agenda. In one of the last interviews before he died, he told Guns.com that he was strongly opposed to Mr. Obama's gun control schemes and that attempts to confiscate firearms from law-abiding American citizens would not end well. He told the interviewer, quote, "I've talked to a bunch of cops and Secret Service guys, and they aren't going to go to anyone's house, especially if they have guns. They don't want to be knocking on the doors," end of quote. Now, I'm going to withhold my personal thoughts about this strange shooting until more information is brought forth. I must first admit, however, that my first thought upon hearing the news on Sunday was that Navy SEAL Chris Kyle was executed. Why? Because he's the best of the best among military snipers. There is a communist revolution underway in America. Communist commandos are in operation right now. Revolutionary kill teams are taking out patriots who could lead resistance to the revolution. The entire story coming out of Glen Rose, Texas, is very strange. A famous Navy SEAL sniper meets up at a shooting range with a former U.S. Marine he's never met. Shortly thereafter, the Marine opens fire on the Patriot SEAL and his friend. No struggle, no eyewitnesses. The suspect's home was surrounded by armed police, but he was allowed to escape. Now he's on a suicide watch in the county jail. I would not be surprised to hear a report any day that the alleged shooter was found hanging from a bed sheet around his neck in the cell. Now, if your mind isn't willing to go there with me, I suggest you watch an episode of the new cable television program on the FX channel titled The Americans. It started last week. The R in Americans is replaced by a Soviet hammer and sickle. The good guys in the show are Soviet KGB agents spying in America during the days of Ronald Reagan. That's right. Hollywood wants you to cheer for the KGB spies as they work against Ronald Reagan, a lifelong opponent of communism. Now, you can watch the promos for yourself on YouTube and see it for yourself. The promos say, "Comrades, arise." And that, my friend, is precisely what is happening in February 2013. The underground communist network in America is arising. They're taking out patriots. They're removing generals. They're overthrowing the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America. And after they get rid of all of the patriots like Chris Kyle, you and I have no one to defend us. America, you're asleep. The Trojan horse has entered your gates. The barbarians are inside the country. A communist revolutionary is in the White House under an assumed name. You're being taken over, yet you don't see it. Why don't you see it? Because a delusion has been sent by God to blind the eyes of the people. Why? Because they chose to believe a lie because of their sin. Speaking of believing lies, have you seen the White House photograph of Barack Obama supposedly shooting skeet at Camp David? Mr. Obama now claims he shoots skeet all the time when visiting Camp David. The photo is dated August 4, 2012. It shows Mr. Obama holding a gun against his left shoulder. Of course, he's a leftist. His left index finger is on the trigger and smoke coming from the barrel. Now, the White House warned the public not to mess around with the photograph. And I'm not ready to declare it as a fake yet, but I wouldn't be surprised it's as fake as his birth certificate. There are a number of things about it that are odd. First, for a guy who claims to shoot skeet all the time, Mr. Obama's stance is a bit stiff and unusual. Second, is that a rifle or a shotgun? Looks like a rifle to me, but I'm not sure. I've never shot clay pigeons with a rifle. always used a shotgun, so maybe Mr. Obama's got some other technique I've never used. Third, he's aiming almost straight ahead. So that clay target must have been really low to the ground when he fired the gun. I've always tried to shoot them when they're still high above me. Fourth, there's smoke coming from the end of the barrel, but there's another plume of smoke coming from the side of the barrel. What is that? Mr. Obama may want to plug that hole with some chewing gum. It might hurt somebody with a gun that has two exit holes in the barrel. Fifth, there's no blur in the photo from the recoil of the gun, so I guess the photographer was really fast when he snapped that photo. And there's one more unanswered thing that the White House could help me understand. The White House photograph is stamped August 4, 2012. Well, when you go back last year and look at the news for that day, Reuters news agency reported on that day, quote, Mr. Obama, an avid golfer, played with colleagues and friends at the Andrews Air Force Base in hot, muggy weather conditions before taking Marine One to Maryland's Catoctin Mountains in the afternoon. End of quote. Reuters also reported that Mr. Obama, quote, helicoptered to Camp David Presidential Retreat for a quiet evening off the campaign trail. No mention that he arrived early enough in the afternoon to get in some skeet shooting. Reuters also said Mr. Obama's evening consisted of a, quote, birthday meal he was expected to share with wife Michelle. Also, the clothing Mr. Obama was wearing on the golf course that day is different from the clothing he was wearing on the shooting range supposedly the same day. And no reporters bothered to mention in the reports from Camp David that the president spent the afternoon shooting clay pigeons. You would think, for a guy that does it all the time, that they would mention it, since they mentioned that he is an avid golfer, and we've all seen photographs of Mr. Obama golfing. Well, Mr. Obama's alleged clay pigeon shooting photograph is suspicious, but more troubling is the suspicious facts surrounding the mysterious execution-style murder of America's most famous military sniper, Chris Kyle, and his friend. I'm Rick Wiles. This is True News.
Reporting the countdown to the second coming of Jesus Christ, you're listening to True News, the End Time Newscast.
Are you trying to work something out between you and God? A nap might be just what you need. Dr. Stanley explains in today's Moment with Charles Stanley.
Now, one of the most exciting things to me as a pastor is preparing for the messages. And I have learned that one of my best tools for preparation is sleep. Now, that doesn't mean I didn't sleep around all week with the Bible and just hope something's going to come out on Sunday, because I work diligently. And sometimes it comes hard and sometimes it comes easier. But here's what I've discovered. Some of the most precious things that God speaks to me about, he wakes me up right out of a dead sleep. For example, this past week, I woke up, sat straight up in the bed. I reached up and touched my clock because it has a light on it. And I usually check the time if I think God's saying something. And so I punched it. It was 5:20. God said, here's what I want you to do. Crystal clear, could not be anything but God, out of a total dead sleep. Now, what does that tell me? That tells me so many things. It'd be another sermon. It tells me, hey, I love you. I'm interested in you. I'm caring for you. I'm talking to you. I'm in control of you. Just trust me. That's what he's saying. Listen to this carefully now. This has absolutely nothing to do with being a pastor. Nothing. Because God will do in your heart for you the same thing he'll do for me. All you got to do is listen. Has nothing to do. You see, don't put pastors and Bible teachers up on some plateau. And as a child of God, he's willing to speak to any single one of us the same way if we're willing to listen to him.
But if you're not a Christian, a great place to start your journey is with the third chapter of John in the New Testament. And you'll also find information in the All Things Are New section at intouch.org.
Welcome back to segment two of True News. I'm Rick Wiles. Our web address is truenews.com. True without an E, TRUNEWS, truenews.com. And our mailing address is Post Office Box 690069, P.O. Box 690069, Vero Beach, Florida. The zip is 32969. In recent weeks, I've interviewed several guests who have expressed concern about a growing litany of actions or inactions by Barack Obama regarding America's national security. When viewed together, a reasonable person could easily conclude that the collective result of the decisions is a weakening of our national security. The debate, in my opinion, is whether these actions to weaken national security are deliberate or the result of a far-left worldview that sincerely believes that all leaders of governments around the world want world peace. Among the things Mr. Obama has done so far include, upon entering the White House in 2009, he ordered the Pentagon to reposition American nuclear missiles away from Russian and Chinese targets. He publicized the exact number of warheads in America's arsenal. He promised outgoing Russian President Medvedev that he would have more flexibility in his second term regarding reducing America's nuclear arsenal. He implemented plans to reduce, or he is currently implementing plans to reduce America's nuclear warhead arsenal down to a mere 300 warheads. He reneged on missile defense system pledges to Eastern European allies. He started a policy of announcing U.S. missile tests and satellite launches. He indirectly funneled $20 million to Hamas. He ordered U.S. troops in Afghanistan and Iraq to read Miranda rights to captured jihadist terrorists. He ordered defense and intelligence agencies to stop using terms such as terrorism and jihad. He repeatedly apologized to foreign nations for America's past actions, in addition to bowing down to foreign heads of state. His administration classified the Fort Hood massacre of American troops as workplace violence. He withheld rescue operations for Americans trapped in Benghazi. And in regard to Benghazi, there is credible evidence to suggest that Mr. Obama has been smuggling weapons and rockets to al-Qaeda terrorists fighting in Syria to topple the government of President Assad. His administration illegally supplied thousands of weapons to Mexican drug cartels through the Fast and Furious program. He is sending financial aid, fighter jets, and battle tanks to the Muslim Brotherhood-controlled Egyptian government. He has recruited Muslim Brotherhood supporters in the United States and given them important positions in U.S. government agencies, including Homeland Security. And he is currently shutting down the tethered aerostat radar system, a network of surveillance blimps along the southern border of the USA. Well, I've invited retired General Jim Cash to talk about these things. Born in Texas and educated at Texas A&M, General Cash was the command director of the North American Aerospace Defense Command Combat Operations Staff at Cheyenne Mountain, Colorado. General Cash, welcome back to True News.
Rick, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me on today.
Yes, sir. Did I leave anything off the list?
I tell you, that's a good synopsis. I think over the last 4 years, a lot of us have tended to pull back and just see exactly what the president was going to do. A lot of promises in the beginning, promises that have not been kept. But I think personally that, as Mike Huckabee said right after the election, it's time to take the gloves off. It's time to start telling the American people the truth, whether it hurts, whether it stings a bit, or whether it doesn't. They need to know the truth, and I think you got a good start on that today. In my personal opinion, we're seeing the result of the most inept foreign policy that I've observed in my lifetime, and that's compliments of Barack Obama.
The litany of things that I itemized, are these things weakening and damaging the national security of the United States of America.
Oh, absolutely, Rick. But I think we're going even further. This sequester thing, even the Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta, has said that this would be devastating for our military. And at a time when I don't think I can remember when our country needed a stronger military, a stronger hand, a stronger ability, a stronger deterrence than right now, it looks like we may be about to set our military back to a level that we did not see until just before World War II.
Before World War II. And this is coming up this year.
Absolutely. I think even if the sequester goes through, you have to remember we've already taken $500 billion out of the defense budget. And I've always equated a strong defense, to be honest, as national insurance, if you will. That I think, is a good term. You prevent war, Rick, by being strong. You prevent war by maintaining a defense at a level where the bully on the block won't take you on. And for the last 4 years, we've done everything we could to destroy that. Now, a lot of your audience out there are too young to remember what it was like under Jimmy Carter. I was an F-15 squadron commander at Langley Air Force Base when they just brought the F-15 on board. It was a brand-new airplane. And when Jimmy Carter was president, he really couldn't cut the program. It cost too much money. The way those contracts are written, you can bankrupt even our very large aviation companies by all of a sudden deciding one day we're not going to build, as Obama did with the F-22, that we're going to cut our buy from 600 airplanes down to basically, I think we finally bought about 187. Jimmy Carter didn't go that far. He wouldn't do that. What he did is he cut parts procurement. And all of a sudden, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines looked up one day, and we had nothing flyable, nothing would work on the ground because we had no spare parts. A two-year period from 1979 to 1981, I never had more than one-third of the F-15s assigned to my squadron flyable because we just didn't have spare parts. Now, those were tough times. Also, I might mention 18% interest rates and 18% inflation. But I think what we're about to see with this sequester, if it does go through, is going to make that look like the good old days.
And I'm looking right now at a CNN report that just came out a few hours ago. Pentagon braces for budget cut hardships. I mean, these are severe cuts.
Well, and once again, you have to keep in mind what we've already cut. And we're looking at, first we said, well, the F-35, for example, will pick up the slack from cutting the initial buy on the F-22. That program, they're already talking about cutting that program, and that's an airplane, a fighter aircraft, that's supposed to cut across the Marines, Navy, and the United States Air Force. One of the things that President Obama seems to absolutely not care about, totally won't talk about, is the fact that over the years of war, you have to remember our military has been at war now for a decade or more, and we have literally burned our equipment up. The airplanes are high time now. They're obsolete in comparison to what's coming on board both in Russia and China. They're narrowing the stealth gap. They have airplanes that will perform that are coming on board that will perform right along with our F-22, and we have less than 200. And as a sidelight there, Rick, when we say, okay, we have less than 200 airplanes, if you take out training aircraft, depot-level maintenance aircraft, the normal bird just broken in an operational fighter wing, you're probably looking at any given day of only being able to, you'd be lucky to get 100 airplanes flyable. So it's almost small enough that it's of no consequence. So we've canceled all even research development for a follow-on bomber. So our military is probably in as sad a shape right now as I've seen it again in my lifetime. And the only hope there is that we have a new administration come along that understands that in this world, this is a very dangerous world that we're living in right now. And yes, technology is changing. We're bringing the drones and unmanned aircraft on board, and there's a place for them. I hate to admit that, by the way, being an old fighter pilot, but there is a place for the drones. You absolutely are dedicated to maintaining a strong defense. It seems to me we're going in the opposite direction right now.
I want to ask you something about the drones, but I want to go back to this list of Obama's decisions. Do you attribute these decisions to him being inept, naive, or is this a deliberate strategy to weaken America's national defense?
I think it's a combination of all three. On any given day, I have read and I have poo-pooed for a very long time that there was not a plan behind what we're seeing. But it's so systematic, Rick, that it's almost impossible not to be pre-planned to a point, at least to a point. I think that as we see our economy go down further and further and further, in fact, that's going to affect our defense. The military understands we're going to have to put fewer dollars and get more bang for the buck out of what we have. But the sequester is going to absolutely devastate that. I think that inept, that's a pretty good word. In fact, in my lifetime, again, I go back to a lot of years here, as a matter of fact, after every conflict, the Democrats, and as a matter of fact, if you look at the wars that we fought, almost all of those have been started under a Democrat administration. They want to use the military, but then after the conflict, they basically dismantle it. And it takes tremendous resources to rebuild the military, as you well know. So I think it's a combination of all three. I think mistakes are being made right now and have been made over the last 4 years that it's going to take a decade or maybe decades to remedy in the long term.
If the dismantling of our national security is systematic, then who is at the top of this operation to weaken the country?
Well, I think first, let me comment on the kind of the reason for that. What we've seen, again, after every conflict, and even I go back to the Jimmy Carter days, the military is such a plump. A lot of our resources go toward the military, and it's so easy for a leader, and all presidents, it makes no difference, Democrat or Republican, seem to always be short on funds. You know, there's always a need for more money if you're a politician. Military is just a ripe plum for the picking. And after every conflict, we have Vietnam, Korea, whatever, the next Democrat president wants to take those funds from the military, reduce the military, and use those funds for social programs, social engineering. And being an old military guy, you can imagine how I feel about that. The military is also just a wonderful place to do social engineering, see how it works there. If it works there, then we'll try to apply it to the general public. But I think that overall, there's ever been a time in our history when we don't want to do that. You know, you can get into all kind of things here, women in combat, gays in the military, etc. That's social engineering in my mind. Right now, we need a very strong military. We need the best that we can field out there to man that military. And I would tell you, another offshoot that might be best talk about on another day, we need to look at the generals that we're promoting right now. I'm not real happy at all with the fact that we have a lot of politicians serving as 4 stars right now.
What about the generals we're getting rid of? I mean, they're dropping like flies. I mean, I've never seen anything like this, a purging. It looks to me like a purging of the top echelon of the military.
Well, it is a poor time. I would answer that just by saying it's a poor time if you're an Air Force general right now to stand up and call a spade a spade. If you don't agree, you may very well be out of a job because you serve at the leisure of the president. At any time he wants to retire you, he'll retire you. And the threat, I think one of the reasons, in the back of my mind, I've been critical of our higher-ranking officers of late because especially the 4 stars, the people who are really making the decisions, I thought at some point they would stand up and say, enough is enough, go public and say, hey, look, here's what's going to happen to our military if, in fact, we go through this sequester. Even Panetta basically came forward and said that this would be a devastating, it would have a devastating effect on our military. Four stars have been kind of quiet. What I see are these people that want to agree, and I think one of the hammers is, Rick, and this is, you know, you don't become a millionaire by serving 35 years in the military. I'm a perfect example of that. You're kind of dependent on that retirement.
Mm-hmm.
When you retire. And it is, even when after you retire, you can be called back to active duty and anything up to court-martial, sanctioned, you name it, your retirement taken away. I think one of the reasons that our people are a little bit afraid to come forth, number one, they're all looking for the next star. That's what I call political generals, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
You have, by the way, warrior generals and political generals. It's been a long time since we've had a warrior general running our military. And also, there's a big hammer there that could affect your retirement a little bit. So there's a tendency for these people to say, okay, I'm not going to pull the blue uniform off and call a press conference and call a spade a spade. I think I'll just retire and ease out the door and go live my life. As I used to say, hey, there are a lot of trout in Montana with my name on them. I actually retired early myself because I got to the point where I just did not like working with these people that put self-promotion above country. And you've got people right now in our military, I think, that are doing that. I'd like to see more of these guys rip off that blue uniform and call a press conference and say, hey, look, America, we're not going to have a military if, in fact, sequester goes through. And here's why. A, B, C, D, E, F.
I thought maybe we would see that type of leadership during the Benghazi scandal, but nobody came forward.
There's more depth there than we have time to talk about today. But you have to ask, the first question I would have is, why was our ambassador there? Why was he even there? We knew that was a very high-threat area. I saw the chief staff of our armed forces sitting by Panetta this last week. Never said a word when Panetta said that, we're not, something along the lines of that, hey, we're not a police force. We can't respond in 2 minutes, et cetera, et cetera. If you'd look 2 weeks back, you'd see a couple of three-star generals that said that they were basically on alert and they could have responded in less than an hour. Well, let me tell you, those two special forces people that were killed there fought for 6 hours, and they took out a lot of the enemy. There was at least 6 hours that we had to respond to that, and we had forces well within range to go in there and do some severe damage. We didn't do that. So, to me, if you get into Benghazi, that borders on treason. That absolutely borders on treason, and you've got to put Hillary Clinton, our Secretary of State, right in the middle of that.
My thought is the reason they couldn't send troops in to rescue the Americans is the troops who would arrive would discover what was going on in Benghazi. What was going on inside that consulate?
Yes, there's so much that's hidden there, and what difference does it make is not the answer, Rick. This needs to be looked into, and we need to. And again, I think the Secretary of Defense is going to be testifying here pretty soon. I don't expect any light to be shed on this. We have become so focused on being able to shade the truth, and that's. I go back to my original statement: it's time to take the gloves off and be honest with the American people, because. I think if the American people really knew what was going on with this administration, the vote would have been different in the last election. The fact that we are shading, hiding, you reach a point where somebody, and I keep thinking it's going to be our generals, just as you said, I can tell you, I know a few generals that would have done this, would shed light on that and basically stand up and say, hey, here's what happened there and here's why. There would be heads fall, though. This would be catastrophic if the truth of Benghazi ever came out.
You know, Hillary Clinton's comment, what difference does it make? That's basically what she said after Vince Foster's corpse was found.
Mm-hmm.
She got away with that one. She's not going to answer questions on this one.
I remember that well, and there's just no way you could expect anything of consequence to come out of that hearing, I think. And that could be a strong contender for president, in our next election, 2016.
Are we still going to have one in 2016?
Well, that's questionable, too, I think. Yeah. I would not go that far. I don't think, I think you can push the American people so far, Rick, and they're going to stand up like this gun thing. Could I comment on that just
a
second?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
I think this might be a case of the current administration biting off more than they can chew. I've been waiting on that for 4 years. It seems like every day during the last 4 years, I've gotten up thinking, okay, they're going to go too far, and the American people are going to wake up. Man, have I used that term over and over again. The American people are going to wake up, and we're going to throw some of these bombs out, along with their czars and all the other weird stuff that they have done, trampling of our Constitution. I am a strict constitutionalist. I don't believe in this living Constitution BS. The thing that's kept this country from becoming basically another South American third world coup every 3 years, Constitution. So I think that, if we don't like a law, we don't like a certain part of our Constitution, we amend it. There's a process there for that. Well, I don't think that, I honestly don't think that the American people have really, they listen to about 30 minutes of news at night. I don't think they really have a good feel for what, first, how serious the problems that we're facing are, and just how far along the road that can has been kicked. But I think that the weapons, assault weapons banned, that may be able to do that. In the magazines, it's not going to help anything, but that's doable. But if you start talking about registration, a national registration or confiscation of weapons, I can tell you the state of Texas and the state of Montana and a whole bunch more states are going to rise up, and it's going to be catastrophic. And I think this could be one of those things that kind of highlights just how far left the Obama administration is, and the American people might stand up and rebel against that. I am hoping that, in fact, this could be the one time they've overstepped their bounds and they'll cause people to wake up and start smelling the roses.
I agree, but I also believe that the Obamanistas actually want that kind of confrontation.
Well, almost as I could almost justify in my own mind anything that he does is some way being turned that in the administration's favor. And I'll tell you, he's got some pretty smart people behind him advising him politically, no doubt about it. This one, I guess being from Montana, I'm a little overly sensitive to the weapons.
Well, anybody that knows history, you know what's next. After they confiscate the guns, what comes after that is they confiscate your life.
Exactly.
You're defenseless. General, have you heard about this new program on cable television that started a few days ago called The Americans?
No, I'm not familiar with it.
I discovered it about 2 weeks ago, and then last week, watching Fox News Channel, I saw a promo commercial for it. It was stunning what I was watching. And last night, I watched one of the promo trailers on YouTube, and I showed it to my son Jeremy. The Americans is the title. It's on the FX cable channel, and the R in Americans is a hammer and sickle. And the stars of the show are KGB agents. This is a set in the 1980s. And the KGB agents are the good guys. And the Hollywood producers of this show said, we want the American audience to cheer for the KGB. And the trailer that I watched last night, that I showed to my son and his wife, Tiana, it starts out with the words "God bless America." It's in digital lights, like digits on a computer screen, just multiple lines. "God bless America," "God bless America," like you're looking at a computer screen. And in the background, you can hear the voice of Ronald Reagan warning about the communist menace. And then the words "God bless America" disappears from the TV screen, and all you see are the words Comrades Arise.
That's frightening. It's absolutely frightening.
General, this is an American TV show. We're being taken over, and the public is sitting there watching it on TV, and they don't comprehend what's happening.
Well, Rick, the people that's going to affect more than anyone else are the young people. And if you go back to the Communist Manifesto, the history of communism and socialism is to indoctrinate the young. What we have to understand is these are patient people. I put the terrorists, the Al-Qaeda, the really bad guys in the Middle East are very patient people. The communists are patient people, too. They feel that if you chip away just a little bit every day, just a little bit more every day, that eventually you're going to win. And that, in fact, is absolutely true. And that's what's happening, I think, in the United States of America right now. You're beginning to see more chipping at the Constitution. Just a few years ago, how many times would you have heard someone talk about the Constitution being just a piece of paper? It's a living document. It was written by old guys way back when, they were living differently and there were fewer people in the country. So we need to change. This is a fairly new outlook on our government and the way it should be run. And once again, there's a way to change that Constitution if, in fact, it needs to be updated. And it's very difficult. It's hard for a purpose. And as opposed to just disregarding, and to be honest, I think probably my biggest problem with the Obama administration is the fact that they disrespect the Constitution. This amendment, the Second Amendment, is being violated today to a point that we've never seen before. It's being totally disregarded. So I think...
Congressman Paul Brown of Georgia, he made headlines a week or two ago. He said the only Constitution Barack Obama respects is the Soviet Constitution, and I think he said it right. General, I got to tell you what the thing that really bothers me the most, and I mean it emotionally troubles me, is that, and I know you as you're a patriot, you served your country, and I grew up in Western Maryland. I was surrounded by Revolutionary and Civil War history. I had relatives that were, in the Revolutionary War times. I had relatives that fought in the Civil War. I don't know how many times, I've sat at Antietam on the banks of by Bloody Lane and just contemplated what happened in those cornfields, and Gettysburg What really troubles me is that I think about the men who bled, who died, so I would be free. And we're throwing it all away, General. We're throwing it away. That's what bothers me the most.
Well, Rick, you can just even go back as far as World War II. The response of the American people there. They went to war, they won, and they came back home and got on with their lives. And I still have a few older friends who are losing their World War II vets. And as a matter of fact, the Vietnam vets that we get to go to.
Mm-hmm.
I love that generation. I just love that generation. That idea of, hey, I go to war with a really high percentage possibility that I'm not coming back.
That's right.
But I'm doing it for country. I'm doing it for my family, for your family. I'm doing it for the people of the United States, and there's no personal gain here. I'm doing that to protect my country. I don't think we have that feeling among our young anymore.
No.
I really don't. I don't think that we're teaching that. And at the same time, I'm asked very often what my opinion of the all-volunteer force is, for example, as compared to the draft. Well, the people that we actually have serving now, they're volunteering to go. I would tell you, put the group that I initially came into the service with to shame. They are patriotic. They're really, I don't know where we, I just really don't know where we actually come up with these young people that are willing to go to Iraq, Afghanistan, and serve seven terms over there, or the commitment is just beyond belief to me. So overall, I guess it is kind of a dichotomy in my mind that I worry about our college graduates and so many of them being left-leaning. At the same time, I look at our military, and it's just the best it's ever been.
Yes, because the best of America is still signing up to serve the country, while the rest of the country is willing to throw it away. And so I think that's why the best are still in the military. But but the general population is embracing socialism. They're embracing values that are foreign to the entire American experiment of a free government, a free people. And I guess that's what's so troubling to me, is I just see so many people that are just willing just to toss it in the trash can, you know? So, hey, you tell them what Obama's doing and they just yawn. So what, you know? And they're content with it. And that's what really bothers me the most. Hey, wanted to ask you about the drone. About a year ago, I guess it was 2011, Iran captured a U.S. drone, and of course they reverse engineered it. Do you think that was? Do you have any idea how they brought down that drone?
Well, of course, all the communications from Creech Air Force Base. By the way, Bill Creech is that Air Force Base is named after, I think, the greatest general the United States Air Force has ever produced, Bill Creech. He passed away some years ago, and I worked for him for quite a while. But anyway, you've got a young guy sitting at a console controlling these drones, and supposedly everything's encrypted where someone can't take control. In a particular case, I think we learned something. There are people out there that are fairly proficient on computers, and I think very possibly with the aid of the Soviets, they took control of that drone and actually brought it down for the very purpose of reverse engineering that. The drones are going to be a really significant force in the future. Somewhere along the line, we're going to have to define, Rick, what's legal internationally and what's not legal in terms of what we're doing with the drones right now. There's some people who would argue that that's pure assassination, and that goes against, I think, Gerald Ford's executive order way back when that said, hey, we would not, assassination was illegal in this country. So that's going to have to be thought out, because it's so easy to overfly with stealth someone's airspace. They don't even know you're there and employ, fairly high-powered drones with a lot of firepower in them. So I think that's going to be a wave of the future. I don't think it's going to go away because it's been so successful. It's been so successful in the fight against terror, and I think they'll be employed in the future.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on the tragedy that took place in Texas over the weekend with the shooting death of Navy SEAL sniper Chris Kyle?
That was just amazing to me. I think a lot of people are still coming. I'm just still here with my jaw dropped just a little bit. The irony of that. Here was a true hero. As far as a sniper is concerned, I have read some of the feats that he accomplished, and they were just unbelievable. And then for something to happen, as I understand it, he and a mutual friend were working with another veteran who's having some severe psychological problems. And I just haven't heard anything other than that,
mm-hmm.
Rick.
Right. Although there were no eyewitnesses to the shooting, according to the sheriff's department, there were no eyewitnesses. I mean, they're saying, you know, they arrested the man that they believe who did it, but actually nobody saw him do it. I just... I don't know. I just had a really creepy feeling when I heard about it. It's like, how does somebody like that get taken out, shot point blank? You know, was there anything else behind it, or you know, was it just did somebody snap?
It sounds to me like that's exactly what happened, and probably was just he was taken from the back. I remember, and this is not a good story. I hesitate even to bring it up, but this is, if we think this is something new, it's not. I was what we called an air officer commanding the United States Air Force Academy in the early 70s. I left there in 75 to go to school in Armed Forces Staff College, so I was actually curtailed to go to this school. My cadet squadron, I had a young cadet who, his father was a minister, as a matter of fact, and the young cadet wanted to leave. I'd been working with him for several months. He'd come in and said, hey, I want to leave, and what you do is you counsel and make sure the youngster is making a good decision before you let him leave is what it really amounts to. No more than a month after I left there, they have a firing range at the academy, and they shoot these little 22 rifles. They're cheap to fire because the ammunition's inexpensive, etc. At the end of a firing round, there was one extra shot, and this cadet had committed suicide. Boy, you just never know. Mm-hmm. I thought I was pretty good as a counselor and working with these young guys. We had two suicides at the academy while I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And neither one, Rick, made any sense whatsoever. There was no way to understand just how deeply these young men were disturbed.
Of course, they will use this. The Aboministas will use this as, well, here's another mental health case involving a sick war veteran. And I can see where they're going to go with this. You know, we got to keep an eye on guys coming back from the war, and we got to give mental health exams to people who carry guns.
Well, we have to remember too how long World War II lasted, how long Vietnam lasted. Most of the people that went to Vietnam, we're fairly a large country, and we had a draft at the time.
Mm-hmm.
We were fielding a lot of people. And we had some that went to Vietnam two and three times, but the norm was one trip to Vietnam, you don't have to go back. Maybe two if you volunteer. You've got people now in the Middle East that in a far worse environment. The living conditions there are the worst in the world. And you can imagine some of these young people that go over five or six times, they're going to come back with severe, some are going to come back with severe problems. And we need to do a little better job, I think, taking care of those people.
Yes, sir.
Identifying first and then taking care of those people. You know, our economy, almost everything that our young people see today is negative. The economy, we talk about we're facing a cliff. It's one cliff right after another. The young people, we keep telling them that they're not going to have as good a life as their mother and father did. Everything seems to be negative. And then when they join the military, they go off to war, and they spend a lot of time in a godforsaken part of the world, and they thank goodness the American people embrace them a little different than they did the Vietnam vets like myself. When I came back from Vietnam, that was kind of a bad experience, and you've heard the stories there.
Sure.
But we need to have professional services. I'm absolutely convinced that our leaders in Congress and our president pick the easy way out. Every time we have a major problem that could affect votes one way or another, they pick the easy way out, like the gun problem. Okay, we're going to solve the school shootings by limiting magazines to 10 rounds. By saying that that's a bad, tough-looking rifle, so we're not going to use that one because it really looks kind of mean. You know, anybody in their right mind.
Despite the fact that the shooter at the school didn't even have an AR-15 in the school, he kept it.
Oh, that's true. And he also was being treated. He was on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
For a multitude of problems that they have later identified. As a matter of fact, in all of these shootings, if you go all the way back to Columbine,
they're medicated.
Kids were being medicated that did the shooting. So we need to get to the root of the problem. You know, I am so tired of seeing politicians treat the symptoms and not get to the root of the problem.
That's right.
I think, boy, that's, again, there's so many things we could talk about. But
hey,
I got one
last question before I let you go. Going back, several years ago, the ICBM that lifted up out of the Pacific off the coast of California, anything ever come out of that? Anybody get information?
That was really amazing to me how quickly that was killed. I am, I think, myself and another I won't even mention his name, three-star general who lives in Washington, D.C., picked up on that. We both fired pots. We both fired a lot of missiles. And I spent a long time at NORAD, as a matter of fact. So I was listening to the terminology from NORAD, and which led me to believe that was absolutely either a mistake, it was some kind of a missile shot. I still believe that today.
Mm-hmm.
That went off the radar right after we talked. As a matter of fact, that went off the radar, was never mentioned again.
Sure did. But your interview here on True News, it went viral around the world, and a lot of people heard that interview.
I think that there was a bit of a cover-up there, too. It might have been just some kind of a mistake that at the time the president said, hey, American people are not ready for this. There are a multitude of things that could have been, but I recognize a missile contrail versus an airline contrail, and I would have to tell you I'm still convinced of what I said back then.
All right. My guest today, retired General Jim Cash, former command director, NORAD, Combat Operations Staff, Cheyenne Mountain. General, always a pleasure, honored to have you on the program.
Rick, it's been a great pleasure. Good talking to you again. And to the American people out there, I will just say, keep your head up and vote in this next election.
Reporting the countdown to the second coming of Jesus Christ, this is True News.
This is Max McLean. What truths should we bear in mind as we give to God's work? Listen to the Bible from 2 Corinthians 9. Whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows generously will also reap generously. Each man should give what he has decided in his heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that in all things at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. You will be made rich in every way, so that you can be generous on every occasion, and through us your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. From 2 Corinthians 9. Listen to the Bible. It's great for the soul.
Hear more at radiobible.org.
Yes, Mr. Obama is deliberately weakening the U.S. military and our national security. Even worse, he is weakening the moral fiber of the United States of America. Last year, he succeeded in forcing American military leaders to accept homosexuals and lesbians in the armed forces. There was no opposition from the generals and no opposition from America's neutered pastors either. Not a word. They stood silently by as Mr. Obama spiritually sodomized the U.S. military. He is now going after the innocent Boy Scouts. The pervert in the White House is demanding that the Boy Scouts of America end their century-old policy of prohibiting homosexuals from serving in the organization formed to promote love of God and country among America's young boys. Mr. Obama is systematically destroying the moral base of this country. The shocking thing is that America's church pastors don't care, or they're just too afraid to stand up and oppose his diabolical activities. Do these pastors not know that they will ultimately be held accountable before the living God of Israel for their indifference and cowardliness? Where are the men who will stand against the evil and stand for righteousness? I am doing my part. Will you stand with me, or must I stand alone?